My name is Baxter Zevchenko. I'm 16 years old and I have no friends. I've killed people. Lots of people. At least I hear there were people. They look more like monsters to me. I've seen the past through the lens of the eye. It was etched in blood and death and filtered through a veil of tears. The cops think I killed my girlfriend. I'm stuck here with the only man who says he can clear my name. Cape Town's finest, drunkest bounty hunter.
Oh, just go. I'm going to watch this whole thing otherwise.
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you, my friends, have the information you need to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, whatever device you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man, I'm Brian Brushwood. And more importantly, that was a snippet from the beginning of a little short that you can find on Vimeo called Apocalypse Now Now, which I thought was a terrible name till I looked it up trying to find that short earlier today and found out that it's an existing book that has sold a whole bunch of books. If you enjoyed District 9... If you enjoyed Alive in Joburg, the 10-minute snippet that spawned District 9, then you're going to love this. It's got shamanic priesthoods and a techno dystopian South Africa. I cannot say enough about how much I love this 10-minute short.
Right, and it's entirely different because this one is in Cape Town.
Totally different. Yeah. I don't see why they even think. To be honest, I think there's some shared DNA in both of those properties.
Yeah, it kind of seems that way, but not in a bad way in any stretch. Anyway, it's really good stuff. You know what else is good stuff, Brian?
Man, would it be CosmicRadio.tv?
Definitely. And having guests from CosmicRadio.tv like Roberto Villegas.
Hello, everybody. How's it going, good sir?
Yeah, dude, Vincent 404 himself joining us. Thank you so much for being live in studio, man.
Not a problem. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We've got a chock full Cord Killers warning up front. We're recording this the day before the Apple announcement, so we only have all the verified leaks to talk about, not the actual
So basically the announcement.
Yeah. So if you're in the future laughing us with your mocking gap-toothed grin, eat it, David Letterman.
Yeah.
Bearded Netflix Letterman. Time for the primary target. So, James Bond is an MGM property, but MGM, they're good at hotels in Vegas. They don't really so much make the movies themselves anymore. They had a deal with Sony to make these movies, but that deal ended in 2015. Now, Sony's still got a movie to make on that deal, but the rights are back up for negotiation. So Sony's trying to keep the rights, but Hollywood Reporter had some sources who said that Apple and Amazon are in the running alongside Sony and Warner Brothers to buy the rights to make James Bond movies for MGM. And don't forget, Sony has former Apple has former Sony executives Zach Van Amberg and Jamie Ehrlich, and just hired another one from Sony leading the push for this. I don't even know where to start with this, Brian. There's so many interesting things about, you know, first of all, James Bond being potentially up for grabs by a tech company. But then Apple even just creating a content arm with the power of being able to make James Bond movies kind of boggles the mind.
I mean, doesn't all of this feel just a little bit like a gigantic pissing contest? You know, everybody trying to brag about how they can afford a blue chip movie property like this.
I don't know, man. It feels like it's more than just that. I mean, if let's say, I really don't think they will, but let's say Amazon or Apple gets James Bond movies and they release them in theaters, right? Amazon will do that. Maybe Apple will do that. And all of a sudden you go to the theater and it's like the Apple logo comes up.
That would be insane. I mean that's like huge. I'm wondering like what the final cost is going to be for this. Like that's like what's on my brain. And two, I kind of want Amazon to get it. I kind of want to have somebody else have a stab at it. Not because I don't think Warner Bros. Can do a great job. Not because I don't think Sony hasn't done a great job. But I like the idea of an Amazon owning it. Just for the idea that they would release, obviously, movie in theaters because it's James Bond, you have to. But they would also be like, well, what if we also put it on Amazon like a week later? And it's not like they haven't done that before.
And man, that just seems like so reckless. The amount of money that this kind of blue chip property would cost.
It costs a ton of money.
And then
Amazon's been very theater friendly. I would highly doubt they'll break the 90-day window before everybody else does.
But I only say it because it's an IP. And Amazon's done some interesting things with IPs. And I mean, like, okay, here's a movie. And if you think of all the other arms that they kind of own and they kind of do, like, I could see, for example, the week leading up to the Bond film. Oh, hey, look, we have the audio version of Casino Royale for sale. We have all the other Bond movies streaming on Amazon Prime. All these other things could just tie in.
Can I state flatly and for the record that I would hate every moment of that?
I would too, but that's what they would do.
Every aspect of this would feel like a cheapening of a time. And you know what? I don't even know how sacred this brand is.
Sure.
The valuation may be between $2 billion and $5 billion, says an insider. But also, it's a dead, misogynist, Cold War relic that they keep breathing life support in by trying to make him the opposite of the actual character of James Bond. There, I said it. Come at me, James Bond.
Another way of saying what you're saying is they've taken a cultural icon that has persisted throughout the decades and proved adaptable to various cultures and continued to grow and evolve it.
Yeah, but I like the way I said it better. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I missed. I heard not great things about Quantum of Solace. I heard good things about Spectre, but didn't see it. But I'm just so ready for new everything. And
your problem is more with James Bond, than Amazon or Apple.
I'm ready for new stuff too. But I also acknowledge the fact that James Bond makes a ton of money, and that if Amazon were to have that property, they would, as they have before, milk it for everything it's worth.
Yeah, well, which I think would not be great for consumers, and to be honest, would be pretty awful for the brand itself. But also, I'm not going to assume they're going to do that. I don't know. This all feels very, very weird to me. Like, of all the properties to fight over, I you know what all of this feels like? You know what the long shadow I see here is Disney. This feels like we watched Disney buy Lucasfilm. We watched Disney buy Marvel. And now it's like, well, what's left to fight over?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's what's going to be, because you're coming to a point now where these movies are, you know, multi-million dollar, you know, franchises and then multi-billion dollar profit earning things that you don't want to just buy something and hope it's going to make money. You want to buy something and know that it's going to be a good investment. For this, again, from a business standpoint, I agree with you on a content point. It's not great. I don't like it either, but I can see the business side of things, knowing how Amazon does things.
Sure.
That they're going to, if they were to acquire, and so would Apple too. Apple wouldn't be that. They just do it differently. They say, okay, cool. Well, now on Apple Music, here's the soundtrack, you know, for free and that kind of stuff.
Shuddering with every word.
It's not like Sony hasn't done that either with their...
Look, they all do it. Sony's the poster... Sony's the devil.
I know.
Watch that Plinkett review, that scathing indictment of cross-promotional disaster.
Oh, with
Ghostbusters.
With Ghostbusters.
It was awful.
That's great. Anyway,
I'm against it, Tom.
Well, but you're against James Bond, right? And I don't think he's the best example of what you're talking about. I mean, this is a franchise that should have died many times. It proves that it continues to rake in money. So if I'm Amazon or Apple and I've got a shot at getting this, this is dead money. I think Roberto is right. Like, this is easy money, not dead money, dead easy money. Like, this is the safe bet. This isn't going on some moribund old thing you're trying to breathe life back in. This is a strong franchise.
This is a known IP.
But it's a safe franchise.
Oh, yeah.
And it's more interesting to me. It's less about James Bond, and it's more about Apple going big and saying, let's just get top tier. Let's get top shelf stuff right out of the gate. Let's make this happen, and let's become a movie maker out of nowhere. Amazon's got more experience. Amazon's got Oscars under their belt, you know, and they've been releasing theater movies and they've been developing this. So that one, this seems like a logical next step, is let's go for something a little more traditional, a little more franchise-like, whereas Apple seems to be just coming out of nowhere here.
Yeah, and it makes sense. If Apple's sitting on a mountain of cash, and I have an insider tells me they are, then in that case, being third to the legitimacy dance, I guess, you know, basically right now Hulu has more content original legitimacy than Apple does.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So sure. Apple is a distant fourth place.
CISO has more content
original. Yeah, correct.
They used to.
R.I.P. CISO.
Oh, I think they still do, actually, even though they don't exist. But yes, anyway.
So Amazon's play was to give the middle finger to theaters and just be the untheater and do and start investing in their originals, and that paid off. Amazon's play was, okay, if we can't do what Netflix is doing, let's try to be the best of both worlds. Let's release. Let's do this crowdsourced pitch process for our originals, and also let's do original content that releases in theaters and play friendly. And then Hulu is trying to play the same game, and which is why they're the current RC Cola. And then you've got this distant, not even sitting on the bench, Apple. In which case, Apple has the cash, then why not just jump to the front of the line and just say, we're Disney. We're just going to buy it. We're not going to do anything crazy with it. We're just gonna keep making the same movie again and again.
Can you imagine the idea of a James Bond film being exclusive to iTunes in 4K?
No. I positively
but
cannot.
I positively
cannot imagine it.
But that's a high possibility.
No, it is. I'm going to say it's the lowest possibility of anything we've spoken about today.
I think it's possible in the DVD window, right? I think it's possible that Apple puts this out in the theaters in a traditional manner.
Right.
And
during the DVD window. I mean, the idea that as opposed to
the only
to
way
a
you can buy it now, own it at home through iTunes.
That's what I mean. The idea
well,
of
for
that.
A brief window after release. Yes, I can see that.
Okay, yeah.
but that's not what you said.
No, I meant that. That's what I meant. The idea of like you buy it after. Again, it's Amazon has the money. We're coming to a point now where they know that content is becoming important, especially now with the
Apple
idea
or
of
Amazon.
Apple. I mean, okay. Amazon knows this, but. Like I think even iTunes has their own like special video thing you can watch, and
it's pretty bad.
I've heard. But that being said, I'm kind of excited for that thing.
And Apple said they're going to spend $1 billion this year on content. I have to imagine that if they get James Bond, they're going to have to up that budget.
Yeah, what if they only bought James Bond for this year?
Dude, that would still be a good buy.
They're like the guy at the movie draft that buys Star Wars at 75%.
I wonder who that guy is.
He's my future teammate. Isn't he? Let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
Real talk now. Flights of fancy over. Who ends up getting the James Bond rights?
Warner Brothers.
No, it stays with Sony.
Stays with Sony. I think Warner Brothers is a reasonable guess, though. Yeah. Like that's my second possibility. I mean, Amazon has a shot.
They all have a shot, and the deal hasn't been.
I don't
made
think
yet.
Apple really could pull it off yet. I don't think they will.
I think they'll spend money on other things, but
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
They can. Anybody has a shot. It's just a matter of how much money you're willing to spend.
I might even put Amazon second.
I think that's the real. That's interesting. I think that's the real question here. The vibe I get is that all of this felt like a little bit of posturing. This was a PR announcement on behind the scenes on whoever's behalf to
like
indicate that Apple is serious about this level of production.
Do you think that maybe they're trying to split this deal up into
every other movie or something?
Or like James movies and Bond movies?
Or like we're gonna produce and distribute the theater movie, you get the VOD rights, or you get a currently running window, you get because
you're right, even bluff and bluster on Apple's part at least gets them a seat at the table when it comes to negotiating for exclusive.
We know
the old Sony employees at Apple sit down with their old Sony buddies and be like, all right, you guys make the movies, but give us the exclusive VOD rights. Right.
Let us get it for the first 90 days.
That'd be interesting.
That would be.
Yeah. I think the other thing that come out of this with is think of Amazon as a movie studio now. Don't think of them just as Amazon Prime Video. That's another arm that is involved, but they're definitely like right in there as a movie studio. All right, I real quickly want to thank our patrons who make the show possible. There would be no discussion right now. There would be no show you're involved with and enjoying if you weren't giving us $1 an episode or something more in many cases. So thank you for believing in Cord Killers.
Another way to say what Tom just said is all this arguing, it's your fault. It's your fault. If it weren't for you, there would be no arguments. So thank you.
There would be world peace if you weren't supporting Cord Killers.
Yes.
And also, don't forget Movie Draft next week on Monday, right after Spoiler in Time. We'll be doing it live on the Twitch channel, but also available on demand afterwards. And we'll have a brand new winter movie draft slate.
Yeah, dude. By the way, again, thank you, thank you, thank you. Patreon.com/cordkillers. It really, really matters. All those little nickels and dimes and dollars and $100 bills, you'll never notice them, but they notice to, they mean a lot to us.
And we had people asking, they sent an email asking about the movie draft list for the coming winter draft next week. Check the show notes for the show that you're listening to now. We'll have it all posted to when the movies are coming out and what is going to be up for grabs. We're going to do a random auction again like last year. So check the show notes for that, and we'll see you next week for drafting.
Yeah. More about that in Spoiler in Time. Now it's time to tell you how to watch.
With your eyes. Oh, you beat me to it.
The co-host takes too long. Plex has made its add-on for the Kodi Media Center software free. This allows both systems to run at the same time and share settings. Now, it's not the first time you've been able to do this, but you either had to pay for a Plex Pass or you had to get it from some fly-by-night shyster, which, as we've mentioned before, Plex has been going down out and shutting down some of those extensions. Now, with the official Plex one now being free, there are some settings like multiple users and parental controls that don't carry over from Plex to Kodi, but most of the basic ones do. And you can just start running it right now. Go do it. Enjoy.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what. Both the I'm going to save it for later. There's something we're going to talk about later.
We've got an email about some legalities involving Kodi and Fire TV, but that's separate from the whole Plex thing.
Yeah, but I will say thematically, Plex is the only other thing that I've heard burst out of our legitimate cord cutting bubble quite the way that the other one did.
And Plex is full on legit these days. Like, yeah. if Plex is used for piracy, Plex seriously goes after that now. Kodi doesn't, you know, they say all the right things in public. They're not as firm in their fight. And maybe they can't because they're not as big.
Right. But meanwhile, like, and we've talked about the cultural sharing of Plex passwords. Like, oh, man, hey, I like you a lot. You want my Plex password? and given that that's the purpose of it, and it's all legitimate and legal, I think Plex is very well positioned.
I think assuming. What Brian's trying to say is practice safe Plex.
Yes. Yeah, man. If you've plexed with everyone who's ever plexed another Plex. And any one of them could have pirated content.
Girl, I want to Plex you up. Here's my password. Do you use Plex, Roberta?
No, actually, it's funny. I've wanted to use a lot of these media systems. I used to use Plex or tried to, and I realized I just don't download a heck of a whole lot of content. Or if I download
it. You just stream everything?
Well, I either stream it on either Amazon.
Do you want my Plex password?
And Plex is actually good for streaming stuff, too, because
right,
it can coordinate all
your apps.
Right,
but I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't have any, all my other content is on other areas of the web, for lack of better words, like either Rooster Teeth or YouTube or Netflix or whatever. And if it's not, I've bought it on Amazon or Apple TV, that it already has this layer of DRM that if I were to put it on Plex, I'd have to break. Mm-hmm. And there's not a whole...
There are ways to actually... Plex has made it easy to handle that now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I may check it out, then try it out again. Because I tried it with the past. And I enjoyed it when I had the content that was just sort of, we'll say, ripped from my DVDs, because that is legit. I can make a backup of my DVD.
Yeah, as long as you didn't circumvent any copyright protection.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm sure they
would. Well, because I have some... I actually have unencrypted DVDs that are not DRM'd, so there you go. but I might try it again, then, knowing that it can do that with the Apple, because that's always been the issue, was I had so many layers of DRM in my content that I never could, you know, legitimately break it.
Well, I just want to throw it out to the audience. Have you had Plex? Email us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Let us know what your experience was like.
Subtle, Tom.
There will, as we mentioned, probably be a new Apple TV with 4K by the time you listen to this. The idea is that it's going to have the same processor as the 2017 iPad Pro, 3 gigabytes of RAM, support HDR10 and Dolby Vision. A lot of things leaked in an iOS 11 Goldmaster that have told us almost everything about this, except for price and release date. So we'll be talking about price and release date with the Apple TV 4K next week. Also, in the same arena, the Wall Street Journal says its sources say Apple and the movie studios are having difficulty agreeing on the price of 4K movies to be sold in Apple's iTunes store. Maybe that's why they want to get James Bond.
Yeah, maybe.
Make all the movies. Apple supposedly wants 4K movies to sell for $20. which is the current top price for HD content. The studios want it to be more expensive, $25 or $30. And as I mentioned earlier, Apple has hired former Sony exec Kim Rosenfeld as head of current programming and lead on documentaries. So whether they get James Bond or not, whether that all pans out, they are definitely serious about the programming here.
$20 seems high enough. Like going beyond that seems a little insane.
Are we finally beyond the time where standard def on Apple is like the bottom barrel one? Like is the default for when you buy content now HD?
No, the price they show you is always standard.
Right, I know that. But I'm just like are we as a
I'm sure there are plenty of you out there that still buy standard def, sure. But I think the majority probably buy
Let me counter you on that because I haven't done it recently because I've been in the Amazon ecosystem, but when I was watching Walking Dead for spoiler in time, I would always buy that because I resented buying the show. I would buy them standard def just so I could get the story into my head because I knew it wasn't like I was going to go
so
back.
This was long enough ago that you were watching Walking Dead still.
Okay. All right. Point taken.
Well, that's why I asked that because I can see from Apple's point of view that if 4K is going to be the premium, they tend to have the idea that keep the premium cost, you know, a certain cost level and keep their base sort of version at a certain cost level. And that's I can see from the studio's point of view because like no, this is you know higher than our HD. HD should be our you know this is better than premium kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's just marginally better.
I know, and I agree. That's why I see where Apple's coming from. Keep it
now,
20.
Now,
if I ask the question.
Meanwhile, you can get me to pay 40 if you give it to me 30 days earlier. You know, like right. Time windows matter a lot to me, whereas the definition does not.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is typical Apple. Apple always fights on price. They try to get the lowest price because they know they'll make it up in volume themselves. Right. And they argue that it will benefit the studios, too. They're saying the math works out. If you sell it at $20, you'll sell enough more copies that you'll make more money. Studios have other reasons for protecting price points because they're not only selling at Apple, they're also selling at other places. So if they lower it at Apple, they also have to lower it at Vudu and Amazon and everywhere else. So there's a more complex negotiation. But I don't know that they won't come to an agreement. It does sound like Apple's being firmer this time than maybe they have been for a while. And I agree with you guys. 4K is going to become the top price, so HD should probably get a discount when that happens.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about what to watch with all this stuff in Under Surveillance.
Use your eyes. See, I could do it too.
Not as effective.
Oh, I'm so glad Roberto's here for this one. The Netflix anime parody Neo Yokio arrives September 22nd. Get it? New York, Tokyo.
Yep.
Executive producer, creator, and writer is Vampire Weekend's Ezra Koenig. And yeah. Jaden Smith will voice Kaz Khan, the demon slayer, who's the main character. Everybody else is also voicing characters in this. This is not even everybody that's impressive, but Susan Sarandon, Jude Law, Richard Ayoade, Steve Buscemi, Stephen Fry, a whole lot more people. Roberto, what's your take on this?
It's interesting because I'm kind of excited for this. A lot of my friends have sort of been talking about the idea of you know an anime with a lot of representative characters and whatnot. I'm holding my complete judgment until the show comes out because that's just what I do. But I'm excited, and it's funny. I'm looking at the chat room, and a lot of people are talking about how it looks terrible or this. And I go, I don't think it looks terrible. I think it looks interesting. I like again, I'm always a fan of futuristic animes. Like some of my favorite ones are Ghost in the Shell, Zero Mirror's Lane, like sort of cyberpunk stuff. And I've always liked the idea of like the huge megaplex, like Neo San Francisco, you know, San Francisco and things like that, Neo Tokyo and Akira. And I'm kind of excited to have a more modern take on that, even if it's just from, you know, the American perspective.
I think the reason anybody has anything negative to say about this is the word parody. And I don't know if that was in the marketing materials or that's just how people are couching it. But there's nothing about this preview that looks or feels like a parody. There's plenty of stuff that feels like a knockoff or a tribute to other things. It's not a very funny preview. It might be a delightful show. Keep in mind. Here's what I suspect. I suspect it's going to be a perfectly fine standalone anime.
Right.
But somebody recognized, wow, this borrows from a lot of other animes. And
like other animes haven't done that in the past.
That's fine. Yeah. But this is somebody at Netflix saying, well, we have to call this something that doesn't sound like just another anime. And so they threw the word parody on there.
I will say, well, that's why it's funny. I never heard parody until right now. And maybe that's just the sphere I chill in that I never hear.
Well, I don't know.
No, and it's okay. I never, that's
why. Hey, don't judge me.
Listen, Evan Narcisse at IO9 called it a parody in his IO9 article. That's
That's totally, well, because like, I only said it because a lot of times, especially when it came to Ruby from Rooster Teeth, there was a discussion of what is anime? And I kind of get tired of that discussion as much as I get tired of like, what is a video game? In that, like, I see this as looking like a really cool piece of content.
You know what? I think this might be, there is no genre I know of that likes to argue more about itself than anime.
Yes.
Like, and this may be a problem that Netflix is wading into territory that even Crunchyroll can't satisfy everyone on. Everyone's pissed off. You're like, Crunchyroll, they don't have Jeep Jop 7, The Revengeaning, and not Jeep Jop 7, The Revengeaning reboot,
right,
or X.
It's gotta be Prime.
It has to have the authentic bears in it.
Yeah, it's gotta be Prime. It's gotta be subbed. You know, no dubs for me.
Can I say, like, it isn't a very good trailer, and the elements of humor I didn't necessarily pull out, but, like, is it just me, or is Netflix not doing good trailers lately? I don't think Netflix puts together good marketing.
You know what?
I don't think that they
do. I can't think of the last time I will. You know what? In my mental Rolodex, because that's a relevant term, in my mental filing system,
mental
I can't think of
in
any...
In my mental Evernote.
I can't think of any trailers from the last year or two that Netflix has put out that have really gotten me
stoked. I think for new series, yes, I agree with you. For existing Netflix ones, because I enjoyed the Strange Things trailer. Yeah. I liked season 4 trailer.
The BoJack season 4 trailer was really good.
That's why.
This is not a
No,
good
that's why. For new stuff,
all.
They haven't been that great at their trailers. And I think that's why I'm like, I'm holding so much judgment because it looks cool, but I'm waiting until this thing comes out.
How about the trailer for Lore, the podcast that is turning into a 6-episode Amazon original coming out October 13th?
This one's outside of my sphere, man. I'm not familiar with Lore. You guys will have to enlighten me. Or not.
No, nobody? Okay, I'll do my best because I also don't listen to Lore. But the idea is they tell fairy tales with roots in truth. So they take true stories and then they kind of fairy tale-ize them.
Oh, right on. That sounds fun.
Yeah. I'm excited for new, like we talked before, I'm excited for new stuff. So
yeah. Retellings of creepy events and myths from throughout history is how TechCrunch puts it.
So the Brothers Pod.
Yeah. James Gunn is going to reboot Starsky and Hutch for Amazon. It will supposedly continue the original series. So I don't know if the comedy movie Starsky and Hutch is canon in James Gunn's Starsky and Hutch world. But Gunn says it will be a deconstruction of the buddy cop genre.
Is that a thing we do now? Is the only way to revisit something is to do it post-ironically and tear it up?
Well, it used to be turn it into a comedy movie. Now it's like, yes, a post-ironic deconstruction and a dark reboot.
Yeah.
I'm willing to look past that rather highfalutin phrasing there and say, if James Gunn shows me like an old Starsky and Hutch
through his eyes,
what their life is like in the 2000s when they're semi-retired, I'd love that.
Oh, is that the idea they're going to be in the 2000s?
No, it says that is not the idea.
Right. That's
I don't
what
know
I'm like,
what the idea is. All we've got to go on is these couple of phrases.
That's my question, though. Is what time period it's going to be
well,
set
it
in.
Says it's a continuation of the story.
Right.
And I assume it's modern day.
Well, is it
so
modern? Is,
or I think it might be pretty close to.
It could be
continue
the 80s.
Into the 80s, I guess.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is that like you have – that's like, I'm with Tom. It's like I like the idea of a continuation of this story. I want to know what year, too.
So –
because I'm curious what James Gunn's soundtrack could be.
I don't want to say I'm over this take on it, but my overness of this take is less than my unbridled enthusiasm and trust in James Gunn, right? So it's like,
right,
if he told me it's his home movie, it's a deconstruction of the buddy cop genre, I'm like, great, let's watch it.
Exactly.
I think that's kind of why I'm willing to look past that, because the phrase itself is a little off-putting. I don't disagree with you at all there.
I'm with everyone. I would love to see James Gunn just make any more stuff.
Under the Gun.
That sounds like a porn. Anyway, his sex tape leaks. It's called Under the Gun.
Netflix ordered an 8-part musical drama called The Eddie from La La Land director Damien Chazelle. Chazelle will direct two episodes. He'll be the showrunner. Jack Thorne of Skins will write most of the episodes, and it will take place in a Paris nightclub, be shot in France with French casts. They'll be speaking in French a lot. The series score will be written by Glenn Ballard, six-time Grammy winner, who is actually known for co-producing Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill album.
You know, I really like the fact that Netflix is taking it for granted that we're a much more multicultural international society than we were when we were kids. You know, like
it's kind of a business necessity that most companies wouldn't have taken on. Right. Like Netflix said, we're going to expand to pretty much every country on Earth.
Right.
And then we're going to have to start making shows that will play in more than one of those countries. And a lot of companies would have said, then we shouldn't do that. That's a bad idea. And Netflix was like, no, man, that's easy. That's going to be great. We'll love that.
I wonder how much of that is fruit that's born from the seed of Lilyhammer being the very first Netflix original, which was which you could watch Lilyhammer and only like three episodes in realize, oh, I don't think this was made in America or for Americans. I think this might have been for Norwegians in Norway, which of course it was.
But I'm excited for that. Like, I like the idea of them making content that's meant for the other regions that we get a hold of, because that's like, I think that's how you start to find new and exciting things, is that like, here's this weird French film, here's this interesting Japanese thing, here's this, you know, strange Spanish film. I mean, a lot of my favorite films are done by foreign directors, and I'm kind of excited to see that kind of content out of France, and especially with French actors and all that kind of stuff.
And taking like the best of multiple regions and combining it and saying, here, don't just make a French film or an American film, just make something really good. Make a good series.
No, that's what makes me excited. Yes, I agree with you, Tom. It probably was a business necessity, especially start expanding other regions, started making that. Cause I think we talked a while back, the idea of like making that kind of content geared for that region and seeing that now permeate over here at the same time, that's really excited, actually.
Well, and don't forget, Damien Chazelle did Whiplash, and this sounds a lot more Whiplash than it does La La Land. It's not glossy, fun L.A. It's dark Parisian nightclub. So.
I don't.
Deadline reports that Hulu is developing a miniseries about Robert F. Kennedy, starring Chris Pine as Bobby Kennedy. Toddy Kessler of The Good Wife is writing this. It's an adaptation of a biography by Larry Tye.
What do you say? Gamble now. Is it better or worse than, I don't know, 11/22/63?
I don't think Hulu has had good luck with Kennedys.
Or period pieces set in the 1960s, perhaps written by Stephen King.
I sound more like the mayor of Springfield, but... yeah, I don't know, Roberto.
Who's directing it? I guess that'll be my take on it, because I
don't think we have that
yet. Yeah, because like ultimately... it's not like there isn't a whole lot to mine content-wise with the Kennedys, and there's not like a whole lot of stuff we don't know. But if you put the right director and the right sort of, you know, front runner behind it, I think you can still make something good. I need
American flags for others.
Like it all depends, because like you guys said, they've not had really great luck doing that. But I don't think that means that if you don't put the right people, that, you know, I'm curious. I guess that's as best I can give.
Yeah. No. I'm curious as well. I'm there too. All right, let's talk about what we're watching. And Roberto, we'll start with you. What's been filling your
eyeballs? The usual stuff, you know, internet con stuff. Actually, last night I finally finished I finished BoJack Horseman season 4.
Was it good?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It was it didn't quite grab me episode 1 as like all the other ones had, but once I watched episode 2, like that was it. Like I was hooked, and it was.
Can you relatively spoiler free give like the main theme of this one? Because
I would say the main theme of this. I mean, obviously depression's always a constant theme in any BoJack Horseman thing,
right? But they do kind of one arc per season, you know. The arc of this season is
BoJack meets this girl named Hollyhock who. And I guess it's not so spoilery by the episode 2 kind of thing, finds out is potentially his daughter. And then that's sort of the arc of actually trying to find her mother, because, you know, BoJack happened to, you know, sleep with a lot of people at a certain era and time. And it's like, well, who's his mother? And it becomes a sort of thing. But we have a lot of other B-side stories going on, like Mr. Peanut Butter trying to run for governor. We have Diane, his wife, dealing with other things. And everyone's kind of – all this is kind of mixing in together. But yeah, I enjoyed this season a lot more than I thought it was. And I was holding off, I was trying to hold off to watch it till closer to October, because October is like when everything kicks off.
National BoJack Horseman month.
Well, no, October is like, you know, basically I'm waiting for October. Like, we have Ruby Volume 5, we have Mr. Robot Season 3, and it's just like, I know that I need something to tide me over, but I was like, I have to watch this.
You ate all the candy in one sitting.
Yeah, basically.
What about you, Tom?
I knew it was coming back, and then I saw people talking about it, but it was kind of a failure of Netflix that it never pushed it in front of me and said, hey, it's back today. You should probably start watching it.
On the great list of things people don't like about Netflix, failing to push more in front of me is very rarely.
Why won't you push the things I want you to push in front of me so I don't forget them? Brian, what have you been watching?
Dude, I finally got caught up on 3 weeks of Preacher last night, and I could not be more fired up for the big finale tonight as we record this. We'll talk about that in spoiler in time. Of course, watch Firefly. Watch my own dumb face giving a TEDx talk in Hartford, Connecticut, which I'll post at some point.
Yeah.
I went and saw, last night's Rick and Morty was amazing. And you fell out. You've never kept up with Narcos, right? So I can.
No, I'm still in the middle of season one, and good intentions to go back. But
so on the one hand, Narcos season one is about the rise of Pablo Escobar. Season two is about the decline of Pablo Escobar. And season three, I like what they're doing. It's about what happens to the void left by him. And essentially what you get is this Legion of Doom who's like, we're not going to be showboaty like Pablo Escobar. We're going to be smart. We're not going to make shows of torturing people. We're just going to quietly mangle their bodies and throw them in rivers. The one thing is it doesn't have, like, when I think of Narcos, I think of one thing, a bunch of people talking Spanish, and then Southern drawl blonde guy explains to you in plain terms what this really means. Only Southern drawl blonde guy isn't there anymore because he's not part of the story. It's Kmart Harvey or Bardem with the mustache. And so it's just got a different texture to it.
Gotcha. I watched a lot of Weather Nation this weekend because Weather Channel isn't on PlayStation View or Sling TV, but Weather Nation is on Sling TV. Turns out Weather Nation, you don't even need to have a subscription for. You can just download their app. They're everywhere. They're on the Roku. They're on Apple TV. They're on iOS and Android, and they have a live stream. So if you're like, I need a Weather Channel, you've got it. Go get Weather Nation. It's not just for hurricane season. You can have it whenever.
Although that is kind of your free trial that you get. It's like, we know you're here for the storm.
Yeah, come for the storm, stay for the weather. And I was impressed. They do. Some ways I think they do a better job because they're not trying to push themselves into being more than just the weather with shows. They're like, we are strictly here to talk about what's going on with the weather, and they do a great job. Also, my wife started watching Outlander, so I have been sucked into that whole fandom and universe, and it is very romancy, very sexy, but it's a time travel story, so I'm hooked, and I have to say they did a great job with it. If you don't like it, it's because you don't like romancy stories like that. It is very well done. And don't forget, it's Ronald D. Moore, the guy who did Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, wow. That's a nice pedigree. I was traveling so much that I just wanted, you know, a little center me time. So I did something I very rarely do, which is go see a movie by myself. And I went and watched Logan Lucky. Did you happen to catch that?
Eileen and I did go see that a couple weeks back, I think.
Should we talk about it? Because I think I hated it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe we should talk about it then, because I kind of loved it, but well, it was I feel like I have the mirror reaction, like, I think I liked it.
Well, and I guess I went in expecting more, because it's Soderbergh, right? And he did Ocean's 11.
Oh, that's interesting. So I went in. Eileen said, oh, we're going to see Logan Lucky. I'm like, great. Know nothing about it. I don't even know who made it or who's in it. And she's like, well, Channing Tatum. I mean, just stop. I want to be Jeff Cannata. So yeah. I Jeff Cannata'd that one, and I wonder if that makes the difference.
Okay. Well, yeah, non-spoiler review is there are two aspects of it. One is tonally, it shifted all over the map, where it's like it seemed like for a while I was supposed to take it seriously as like, oh, this is the plight of the lower middle class in the South. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they have a cartoon character who's just a little too giddy to look at me. I'm in Hollywood getting to pretend to do an accent. And then it's like, oh, you're mocking it. And then they cut to, like, you know, this 4-minute unironic Americana patriotic Leanne Rimes singing the national anthem thing. And I'm like,
well, wait, are you? And then it's like, and then they're like, oh, also it's a heist movie. Only we've given you none of the details. We've not explained any of the qualifications of any of the people. We haven't explained any of the plan. There's giant black voids for parts of it. And then at the end,
we're huge plot hole as to what, I'm not going to explain what, but why did they have to blow up anything?
Well, and also, like, were we really supposed to believe that that's a legitimate way to blow a thing up? Like, is this just a silly movie? And then they go back and then they reveal, like, oh, here's what was in those little tiny cracks in the story that you missed. I'm like, oh, you mean the actual plot? Thank
I also want you guys to spoil this right now because I'm like, what the heck happened in this movie?
Yeah, I don't think I liked it.
I don't disagree with anything you said, but because I had zero expectations and I was not even thinking what kind of movie this was supposed to be, I enjoyed it. I was like, oh, that's funny. Oh, that reminds me of Home. You know, oh, that's, you know, that's a silly thing. Oh, this doesn't make any sense, but it's fun. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
it may just be the difference between you and me is all there is to explain.
Well, I went into it seeing 94% positive reviews on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, yes.
I saw it 1 point higher than Dunkirk, and I heard Dunkirk changed people's lives.
So I went in my perspective on this. Because
I went in. I'm like, all right. Not Dunkirk. I didn't go see Dunkirk, so I could see you, Logan Lucky. Okay,
and then, I think that's I think that's you putting too much stock into a Rotten Tomato percentage point.
Blame the consumer.
Listen, Rotten Tomatoes is a very fine organization that employs my wife.
I'm not saying they're a bad organization. I just say after a certain point, you know, it's a meta, you know.
I do like on my scale, on my new movie scale, I give Logan Lucky good. It was good.
That's, I mean, if you enjoyed it, cool. If you didn't, cool. Yeah. I want to check it out because I didn't even know it was a Soderbergh film until you told me now.
I didn't demand a refund. That's my new scale. Did I demand a refund? No.
I was surprised to find out it was Soderbergh after I saw his name on the screen. I'm like, oh, okay. Doesn't seem like his kind of movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. What have you been on the lookout for, Bryce?
Hey, we got a letter in from Howard, who sent along this vlog recommendation, kind of an unorthodox choice this week. He writes, here's what may seem an odd suggestion for the Cord Killers on the Lookout section. A YouTube series called All the Stations is an entertaining travel video blog worthy of any rail enthusiast or Anglophile's attention, cough, cough, Tom, he writes. Jeff Marshall and Vicky Piper visiting all 2,564 railway stations in Great Britain and are video blogging their adventure. Most of the footage is self-shot, often on the run by Jeff and Vicky. There's a small group of backdoor staff who support staff who help them navigate the British railway system and help them stay on track. They recently finished a week, this is from June, visiting the railway stations of Wales while slaughtering the Welsh language and celebrating the halfway point of their quest. Next, they're heading north. The couple also post on Instagram, Facebook, and Periscope, as well as all the links on their website, allthestations.co.uk. Their YouTube videos are posted every day of their journey, usually for a week, and they're nicely titled. Most videos are under 14 minutes, so it's an entertaining way to spend a quick coffee break or, more appropriately, afternoon tea time. Even if you're not interested in trains or Great Britain, All the Stations is a good example of video blogging done right. The YouTube channel is All the Stations. Enjoy. That's from Howard in Mountain, Maryland. I watched a little bit of this. This is really cute. Like, it's just this couple of people, and they're just on a train, and they're just checking out all these different stations. It's such a light thing, but it's very cute.
Ever since last year, I've kind of become a little bit of a rail enthusiast, so I may have to actually check this out because I've kind of, this seems cool. I like that, especially from the UK side.
And so they check out multiple stations in one episode, so it's not 14 minutes of like, here's what's going on.
Right. You only do that with so many stations.
Now, in the gentleman's room.
So if you just look up all the stations on YouTube, you can watch all of their channels or all of their videos. It looks like they've got like about 60 episodes or so of this thing. So that's pretty cool. Check it out.
I'll check it out.
Excellent. Full speed ahead. Hey, if you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Brian and I like to tell you about other projects we've got going on. And the one that I've got going on right now that is probably dominating most of what I'm doing is improving the Daily Tech News Show, which is the daily news about tech show that I do. And I want to get my old pal Sarah Lane, who I used to co-host with at Tech News Today, on DTNS every day. We're adding her and not taking away anything. All the existing co-hosts will stick around. We're even going to do new shows with them as part of something called DTNS Labs. We're going to finally do a monthly roundtable show that everybody's been asking for. So patreon.com/DTNS is where you can find out more about that. And we're super close to the goal. So thank you to everybody who's supported us. And if you're interested in tech news, go check it out.
Yeah, dude, this is big, big news.
All right, let's move on to the front lines.
Frontlines!
AFTV News says it has sources who say Amazon will release two new Fire TV models later this year. One will be a new take on the Fire TV Stick. I guess the existing Fire TV Stick would stay at the lower price point, and this new one would sell for a little bit more because it can do 4K, and it's got a squarish form factor now. The other is a regular Amazon Fire TV box that could also do 4K and HDR, but and by the way, the Fire TV Stick model would do HDR as well. This new Fire TV box would include Amazon voice services, not just the voice assistant, but because you can get that on your existing Fire TV, but the far field microphones that the Amazon Echo has and a speaker so that even when your television is off, you could use it like an Amazon Echo.
Man, that'd be great if I'm ready for the whole ecosystem to be fleshed out. Everything's going piecemeal, which is fine. That's the way it's got to start. But I'm like, hurry up, make.
What's the piecemeal part of this that bothers you?
I want everything to plug into the Echo ecosystem all the way across the house. I am reluctant to buy any other devices.
What? Like. Lights?
Well, I know they integrate with the Hue, but I have to touch them and do things, and I'm ready to. Look, stop me if you heard this before. I would like to remain ignorant and dumb and have a system take care of everything for me.
This sounds super familiar.
But that's it like again. That's a criticism with Amazon voice services, not the Fire TV implementation of it.
Correct. Although I got to tell you, for the convenience factor, in general, the Fire TV that I have runs fine when I bother to load it up, but it's just easier for me to go into the Amazon ecosystem from the PlayStation 4. And I think that's what's triggering this piecemeal thing. Like, I have a Fire TV, but can't be bothered to switch over to it.
What if you had this Fire TV and you could just say her name, start playing Firefly, and it just turned on, went to Hulu, started playing Firefly.
If it did that, then I'm in.
But that's what they're promising.
Okay. All right.
Which Fire Stick do you have, Brian?
I got a Fire Stick, and then I got the Fire TV, the gaming edition.
Sure, but
the HD.
Are those like the first one?
No. The last one I got was a year and a half ago, so it's a fairly recent generation. Mm. It runs fine once it gets loaded, but it's just minor inconvenience. Mm. Disney CEO Bob Iger announced that Disney will make its Star Wars and Marvel movies exclusive to a new streaming service launching with Disney and Pixar content in late 2019. And the internet did say, ah, damn it.
I mean, that's okay. We knew that they were still talking to Netflix, and we know how those talks ended now, which is like, no, thank you. We'll keep those amazingly valuable properties for our own streaming service. And frankly, I mean, everybody's pretending like they have like fatal paralysis about choice, but it's just because we haven't settled into the world yet. Once this comes along, I think this is going to be incredibly popular and people are going to want it. Does matter what they charge, though.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit like Frito-Lay announcing a new Doritos blend that's got crack in it. And it's like, ah, damn it. And it's like, no, it's going to be good. You're like, yeah, I know. It's got crack in it. It's going to be great. And I'm not thrilled that you're offering it.
Roberto, you have any thoughts on this?
I mean, I, like you said, it's their IP. It's their valuable stuff. When I read this, like, oh, well, great, I don't get to watch this on Netflix anymore. Oh, well, I guess I'll just go back to buying movies that I buy already. And even if that's the case, it does depend on the price. And I'll be honest, it also depends on what other Disney stuff comes on. Them being Pixar is great and having all the other stuff is awesome. But it'd be really cool if they start putting some of their TV shows on there or something like that, or some of their
content. Disney TV shows will be on there. Right. I don't know about ABC stuff.
Right, that's the question. Like how much even some of their older content would be interesting, and just seeing how like what else they build out a streaming service, because they also own. I know they own some other streaming things that I like in terms of other studios. I'd be kind of curious about.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what they're talking about here is all the Disney television properties, all the Disney movies. And Disney television, not ABC television, like Disney Junior, Disney Kids, and then Pixar movies and now Lucasfilm movies and Marvel movies.
Right.
Disney Movie Anywhere, however, sent out an email saying it no longer works with Microsoft's movie and TV store. That applies to future purchases. Existing linked movies will remain available. But it definitely, I mean, I never bought anything out of the Microsoft store to begin with, but it certainly goes off my list of considerations now.
Yeah, dude, that's the big, although are you as terrified or do you think we as a culture are as terrified of owning stuff in the cloud as we were 5 years ago? Like nowadays, once I buy stuff, I so rarely go back to it. And
I love Disney Movies Anywhere because that means I don't have to think about where I buy it. I buy it on Vudu or iTunes or Amazon, and I get it in all of those places.
I'm with Tom. I love Disney, especially for like the fact they can link to Amazon or link to iTunes or any of the services. Like I just buy it once and it's everywhere. And there have been times where like, I want to watch this one clip from a movie. Or I want to watch a movie again. And they're like, well, I have my phone on me. Let me go done. So yeah, I use Disney Anywhere a ton. So it being not Microsoft isn't a big deal to me. Much like you, Tom, I have it everywhere else.
And even like when I buy a disc, like a Blu-ray disc, yep. like Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah. for instance, I register that with Disney Movies Anywhere, and then the digital copies show up on Apple TVs and everywhere.
Yep, same here.
Nice. Roku filed paperwork for an IPO. The filing shows 15.1 million active accounts, streaming 3.5 billion hours last quarter, up 60% on the year. Revenue per unit is up 35% on the year to $11.22 for a total annual revenue of $398 million. Advertising and platform subscriptions make up 81% of the company profits, up 104% over the last 6 months, while profits from hardware fell 28% in the same span and represents 19% overall. Roku also launched its own channel for Roku users that streams free movies licensed directly from studios by Roku and supported with advertising. How big a splash do you think Roku's going to make when it does this IPO, Tom?
I don't know. I look at this IPO as far as Cord Killers goes as a representation that like, hey, Roku's doing well. They're willing to like go issue stock. That's a company that's confident that's doing that. Whether it'll go up, down, or sideways, I have no idea. But it's good news for Roku fans because it means that they're a stable company that's solid enough to go issue stock. So if you have a Roku, it doesn't sound like they're going away anytime soon. The other thing to take out of this is the fact that profits are coming from advertising, which means Roku is not worried about monetizing its hardware. It's worried about monetizing you using the hardware. And that Roku channel, I'm skeptical of whether a lot of people are going to watch it. We'll see how much they push it in front of you. But it's a genius way to do it. I mean, if you've got people's eyeballs and you say, hey, you can watch this great movie right now for free, just watch one ad before you start the movie, that's going to do something for Roku. I don't know exactly how much use it's going to get, though.
Yeah, I read Tim Wu's latest, The Attention Merchants, that really sort of redefined the lens through which I see all of that stuff. And now it's like I understand, like, yeah, lose a bunch of money on the hardware. Doesn't matter. You have their eyeballs. You have them by the eyeballs.
Does Roku sell access to make apps on there, or can you make them for free?
No, you make them free, yeah.
Okay, because I can see then that's really their only income source because they're not selling any content directly on Roku. Like in other words, you buy on Amazon, you buy on other things, and you can stream to the Roku device.
You actually buy the Fandango Now store through Roku's menu, and I think Roku gets a cut when you do that.
Okay, well, that's not a whole lot, but yeah.
And and if you sell your app on Roku takes
right, of course. Just more asking like if Apple get to pay licensing fees or something like that.
TechCrunch confirmed a Cord Cutters news leak that DirecTV Now's forthcoming DVR plan will have up to 100 hours of storage managed from a My Library feature. No word on how much they'll charge, but DirecTV Now still bringing you a DVR feature soon.
Well, woo-hoo. I'm not going to fault them too hard on it. We've seen success stories and failure stories of slow, semi-botched launches, but they have to know that they're in this for the long haul, right?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. This means they're going to do it, and they have to do it, and they know they have to do it. And their deal is going to be paying by storage, it sounds like. You'll get 100 hours of storage. Maybe it'll be part of your subscription, and then you could up it like Hulu does, where you pay extra to get more storage or something like that. Sling TV does it that way. And I have to say, the Sling TV Cloud DVR, now that it's rolled out finally, works really well.
Yeah.
The Creative Arts Emmy Awards were given out this weekend. These are the ones they give away a week before the main awards broadcast, which is this coming Sunday, September 17th. Stranger Things took home 5 awards, including sound and picture editing, as well as main title. Netflix documentary 13th from Ava DuVernay got 4 awards. Handmaid's Tale got 3, including production, design, and cinematography. Overall, Netflix got 16, Hulu 5, and Amazon 2. Good job, Space Team.
Of the pre-Emmys, they're not technical Emmys because there's some, you know, guest star actor awards.
The Emmys, these are the ones that by having Emmys. by having a separate award ceremony, they're sparing us from a 12-hour Emmy Awards event.
Yeah, or maybe they have too many awards. I don't know. I don't know how to look at it. The Oscars do the same thing. They have their separate award ceremony for technical achievements.
I'm just glad, you know, Strange Thing is getting awards and all the shows I like are getting awards, because that means the industry's looking at this stuff good. And it's cool to see, like, the title got an award, because, like, that's probably the one thing everyone loves of Stranger Things is just opening crawl.
All right, let's check some dispatches from the front. Jerry writes, "Hey guys, since becoming a cord cutter, I've been more attentive on how people get their media. Now, this is only anecdotal, but one thing I've noticed over the past year is how widespread the knowledge and use of Amazon Fire Sticks with access to everything free has become. People come to my house, I show them how to watch stuff on my Apple TVs, and remind them that I don't have cable. People from 14-year-old cousins to 50-year-old uncles will say, 'Oh, do you have the Fire Stick where it has everything free?' I tell them I don't. And then they tell me I should get one. I will admit I've done my fair share of pirating back in the day. However, I now consider myself a born-again cord killer that is mostly legit because there are actually easy legal options to access content these days, which is what I thought everyone wanted. To me, it seems getting it free may still be a larger component to the equation for some people. I've never used a special Fire Stick, but if it's as easy as ordering it and plugging it into your TV, I don't know how big media can compete with that if there truly is a growing population that doesn't see any issues with it. Your favorite boss, Jerry."
Yeah, man, I got to tell you, there's something there's a culture. Some people just want it free. They get giddy at the idea of not paying for things. And I'll be honest, there was a time I was there, but mainly it was, you know, that indignant moral outrage that only an 18-year-old can summon, that is like, $200, you expect me, I'll show you. But now that all the options are there for easy, it's harder for me to be sympathetic. What do you think it is about this iconic grail of get everything for free magic stick?
Roberto.
I was going to say, I think the idea of getting it for free is more because everyone's assuming things like on YouTube are free and things on Hulu are free, even though they're getting paid for by this magical thing called an ad.
Right.
That gets thing. Like, I get giddy, for example, paying things and never seeing ads.
Yes.
Like,
that's the way I am.
Like, I have PlayStation View, and I know come October, I'm still going to pay Amazon for Mr. Robot Season 3 because I do not want to see an ad. I can't stand it.
That dumb guessing game of, like, what is a 90-second break? A 2-minute break?
Like, I get
2 minutes, 30 seconds. What are you? Oh,
like, the only time I've ever heard an ad break be cool was when they had the flashback. They, like, the telling, like, Full House-esque episode of Mr. Robot, and they did the ads from, like, the 80s and 90s. That's the only time an ad break has ever been cool.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing about it is, like, people know that there are these jailbroken devices. Like, the jailbroken Android devices are well known. So I think on some point, I agree with you, Brian, that there are people who are just like, I want it free. But then there are also people who have heard, oh, you can get it for free.
Right.
So I will just do that because that's the
legend. It's the legend of the Sonic screwdriver.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes. Pay attention to Jerry's penthouse-like letter. I have a friend who says,
yes.
No one in his story ever says, I have this Fire TV stick and I use it.
Right.
Correct.
This is so Jerry, you very responsibly said, hey, this is anecdotal, but it makes me wonder. And that's totally fair. People are reading Reddit. And on Reddit, people are talking about, hey, you can get that Fire TV stick. So everybody knows about the Fire TV stick that gets you everything for free. How many of them actually have one and use it? I don't know. What they're talking about is you can take a Fire TV stick, and by finding out its IP address, you can go to your PC, you can connect to it over your network, you can sideload Kodi, and then you can get the extensions for Kodi that are not properly Kodi approved that will allow you to get other services that will then get you all this stuff for free. That's what's going on. It's not from Amazon. You can't just go on Amazon and say, give me the special Fire Stick with everything for free.
Give me the piracy edition of the Fire Stick.
There's not to say that there aren't people selling the Fire TV sticks that have preloaded Kodi on them. That definitely exists, but those are not usually reputable sellers. So you may want to be careful if you go after that. I don't think this is a widespread thing, although I'm going to guarantee you that the small percentage of our audience does have and use these things. It's just I don't think it's a huge number.
The mod chips back in the PlayStation era where everyone's like, do you have the chip PlayStation
or a chipped Xbox?
Right,
like those are the guides I would see.
Right, you got a chipped Xbox? Like, yeah, you can play everything for free. Just burn it. It's done.
Yeah.
Or all that kind of stuff. I had friends that did that, and I had relatives that had those sort of things, but that wasn't the majority. Just because
this happened to a friend, huh?
Yeah. Chuck writes in, "Hello, Tom and Brian. Do you know of a box or an app that will allow me to use single sign and create? I think you mean single sign in and create playlists of the shows I watch in all my streaming services: Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, and so on." I think the closest is what they're trying to do with Apple TV, right?
Yeah, that's what it made me think of. You can't really create playlists out of that. So yeah, we'll throw this one out of the audience. If you know. For let's say for PC, Mac OS, Roku, whatever platform, if you know of an app that does what he's saying, which is single sign on for all your apps and create playlists of the shows so that I think what he probably wants is always the latest episodes are at the top of the playlist and he can choose streaming services. Let us know. Cordkillers@gmail.com.
Zach writes in, "Hello, fellow cord cutters. The best website I found for comparing and choosing a streaming service is suppose.tv. You can set your location and choose local channels and cable channels to filter and determine which service they're available on. You can even compare costs and filter by streaming device. This is the tool you're looking for."
This is amazing.
This is really good.
So you just click the channels that you want on the left, and it'll show you the different plans on the different on the different services that have these channels. It's kind of crazy.
So this is the go-to thing for everyone who's like, now cutting the cord. I've heard that's a thing. then it's like, I don't know if it's right for me. Then it's like, just send them here. Huh?
But yeah.
You get to see and they do cable versus online. They don't prefer one or the other. They're like, hey, if you want this, cable might dish, satellite might be your best bet.
I'm using PlayStation View. I may go back here and check it because I've ran a weird issue with my View in that I have to call them to tell them that I have a new router and I'm no longer on my home network, and that's already annoyance that I have no problem canceling my subscription on because of that.
So far, I've been very lucky.
Yeah,
that should be easy. That should not.
No, it shouldn't be. But even then, that being said, they've also gotten rid of the plan I use. And I think they're going to up the cost. So I might shop around again and look because
now this is done by a couple entrepreneurs in Corte Madera, California, which is in Silicon Valley. And it's really well constructed. I put it through its paces earlier today. The pro tip, though, is when I first went through it, I was like, oh, yeah, HBO. And because we're watching Outlander, Stars.
Right.
Don't choose those. Anything that you are comfortable buying as a standalone app like HBO Now or paying for Stars independently, or even if you're willing to pay Stars as part of Amazon Prime, don't choose those. Because I went through and I selected everything and it's like, you should have Dish satellite service.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Because I'm pretty sure I shouldn't. So I went through, I'm like, oh, right. No, I don't need PlayStation View to offer me HBO.
Yeah,
HBO Now. So I unchecked all those and then it was like, oh, PlayStation View is your best bet. I'm like, yes, that makes more sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot, especially because like you can get HBO for anything now. Like, and I think that's important to note that you don't, if that's like, I need to watch Game of Thrones or, like for me, I watch a lot of Last Week Tonight and HBO is like a necessity for me.
And unless you need it to be part of your package for whatever reason. Maybe you prefer it as delivered through Sling TV instead of through the HBO Now app. But I'm just pointing that out. It's like you're saying I need these channels to come through a service, not be standalone.
Makes sense.
Hey, that's it for this episode of Cord Killers. Roberto, thank you for joining us. Let folks know where they can find more of what you got going on.
Oh, I'm easy to find. Just look for me on the Twitters, on the Facebooks, at Vincent404. And of course, just head over to CosmoRadio.tv where I do all my podcast stuff.
Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. And we're live on diamondclub.tv and on Twitch.tv as well. Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll talk to you next time.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you can gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go
with you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.